Lesson 19, June 18, 1815. The Fall of Napoleon at the Battle of Waterloo. Napoleon Bonaparte might have stayed in power a long time in France, but something got in the way. That would be Napoleon's obsession with power. Being never quite satisfied with what he possessed, his ambition led him to try to conquer Russia in 1812. Namely, he set his sights on occupying the capital city of Russia, which was Moscow. Things didn't work out at all as planned. Moscow would effectively mark the beginning of the end of Napoleon's lofty career. You see, much to Napoleon's surprise, when he reached Moscow, he and his troops found it deserted and on fire. The Russians had burned down their own city in a desperate measure to undo Napoleon. Considering the fact that the Tsar of Russia once enticed Napoleon to divide the world, this scorching of Moscow worked to demoralize the French emperor. Napoleon said of the Russians burning Moscow, and I quote, "This is a war of extermination, a terrible strategy which has no precedent in the history of civilization. To burn down their cities, a demon has got into them. What ferocious determination, what a people. What a people." End quote. Napoleon occupied the famous Kremlin in Moscow for about 5 weeks. But with no people to conquer in the scorched and abandoned city, Napoleon and his army of 600,000 headed home in snowy conditions as bitter as the Arctic. On the long trek back to France, the French soldiers trudged along, tired, freezing, and starving. Some resorted to eating raw frozen horse meat. The delirious soldiers were also under constant sniper attack by scattered Cossacks, Russian freedom fighters. 500,000 French soldiers, which was 5/6 of the army, died on their way home. An eyewitness wrote this of the long, horrendous journey, and I quote, "The dull, monotonous thud of our footsteps, the crackle of the frozen snow, and the feeble moans of the dying were the only things to break that vast and doleful silence. Sometimes the snow opened up under their feet. Finally, their heads dropped into the snow, reddening it with a livid bloodstain, and their torment was over." End quote. Besides the exhaustion of the army, Napoleon himself began to show signs of fatigue and poor health. All the energy he once possessed was gone. Sapped of strength, he was vulnerable. Now, if you had been one of Napoleon's enemies, then news of his diminished army and weakened state would be good news. This was the case across most of Europe. When leaders learned of Napoleon's dwindling energy, they formed an alliance against him. In that alliance were the countries of Great Britain, Prussia, Russia, Sweden, and Spain, where Napoleon's brother was losing his throne. Together, these allies agreed to take out the Little Corporal, as Napoleon was nicknamed by friends and enemies. First, the British took it upon themselves to rid Spain of all French troops and overthrow Napoleon's brother. This freed Spain from French domination. Then, in the fall of 1813, Napoleon faced his other enemies at the Battle of the Nations in Leipzig. It was an extraordinary matchup of talents in Leipzig. You could say it was Napoleon's best against half the world. In the end, the conglomerate of Allied nations had the upper hand. Napoleon didn't do well and lost thousands of soldiers. He scrambled to build a new army, but his efforts proved futile. Napoleon lost more momentum than he gained. All of Europe seemed to be against him, and Napoleon saw his empire slipping away. Do you wonder how this power-crazed man felt about losing his grip on Europe? It might surprise you. According to letters he wrote, he felt remorse for the people of France. Napoleon said, and I quote, "It is I who have deceived myself. It is I who ought to suffer. It is not France. She has not committed any error. She has poured forth her blood for me. She has not refused me any sacrifice." End quote. The French may have heard Napoleon's heart, but generally speaking, they had had enough of him. Though he had promoted liberty, equality, and brotherhood, he had done so at the expense of French blood. Determined to oust their dictator, the French Senate voted to put Louis XVIII on the throne of France, and in 1814, Napoleon was forced to abdicate. Napoleon was exiled from France to the rocky island of Elba. Located just miles off the coast of Italy, Elba was only 86 square miles in size, with a population of 12,000. Napoleon was deemed the Emperor of Elba, given a salary to stay put, and denied access to his son. Do you think this tiny island could contain a man as glory-bound as Napoleon? It couldn't. In less than a year, Napoleon escaped from Elba and marched to Paris. Louis XVIII, with nerves quite shaken, sent Marshal Michael Ney to stop the invasion of Napoleon. But Ney, who had once served Napoleon, dropped to his knees at the sight of his former master and declared, "My emperor." Losing Ney to Napoleon, the King of France fled, which meant that Napoleon ruled France again. He was back in the game with Ney and the loyal Imperial Guard by his side. For 100 days, Napoleon was in all his glory. Physically, he was in pain from numerous maladies, but emotionally, he was as confident as ever. His philosophy was this: "Conquest has made me what I am, and conquest alone can maintain me." I think Napoleon really believed it was his destiny to conquer. But during his comeback, the Congress of Vienna was in session. It was a meeting of Napoleon's enemies to restore some balance of power to Europe and scheme ways to stop Napoleon once and for all. In attendance were the countries that fought in the Battle of the Nations and many more. An attack against Napoleon was planned for June and July in 1815. The final defeat of Napoleon. Napoleon knew of the attack planned against him and decided to be the first to advance toward his rivals. He invaded Belgium and aimed to take on Austria and Prussia. But in a string of mishaps, Napoleon's commanders failed him. They got lost, went the wrong way, showed up late, and were confused by their orders. On June 18, 1815, at the famous Battle of Waterloo in Belgium, the British laid low to dodge the French cannons and attack the French head-on. They did this over and over under the level-headed leadership of the Duke of Wellington. Wellington wasn't grandiose like Napoleon, but he was persistent. His thundering cavalry shook the French, who were struggling to coordinate their cavalry and infantry. A British soldier wrote this of the event, and I quote, "Nothing could equal the splendor and terror of the scene. Charge after charge succeeded in constant succession. The clashing of swords, the clattering of musketry, the hissing of balls, and shouts and clamors produced a sound jarring and confounding the senses." End quote. Under the command of Guipart von Blücher, the Prussians joined the British that afternoon, and Napoleon's troops were heavily outnumbered. Within hours of fighting, the Prussians crippled Napoleon's precious Imperial Guard. And that, my friends, ended the famous one-day Battle of Waterloo. Napoleon was defeated. In retreat, he dismounted his horse and walked alongside his men, weeping for those he lost and wishing he too had died. Of course, Napoleon did not die at the Battle of Waterloo. Humiliated, he survived. But since he was able to escape Elba, you can imagine how nervous his enemies were for him to be left alive. They agreed, however, to keep him a prisoner on the windswept island of St. Helena. Barren, desolate, and located off the coast of Africa, St. Helena was much farther away from France than Elba. It was hoped that this island would hold the little man. It did. Under the strict supervision of a British governor, Napoleon lived the rest of his life on St. Helena. A story circulates to this day that with some time to reflect on matters other than war, Napoleon spoke of the divinity of Jesus Christ. In conversation with a general, he supposedly said, and I quote, "Jesus Christ is not a man. His birth and the history of his life, the profundity of his doctrine, which grapples the mightiest difficulties, and which is of those difficulties the most admirable solution, his gospel, his apparition, his empire, his march across the ages and the realms. Everything is for me a prodigy, a mystery insoluble, which plunges me into reveries which I cannot escape, a mystery which is there before my eyes, a mystery which I can neither deny nor explain. Here I see nothing human. End quote. I don't know if this story of Napoleon is entirely accurate or somewhat exaggerated. Debate exists of the account. Regardless, Napoleon lived only 6 years on St. Helena. He died in 1821 at age 51. The death certificate states he died of stomach cancer, but some suspect otherwise. Hair samples indicate Napoleon had abnormally high levels of arsenic in his system, 5 to 38 times normal amounts. At present, the mystery of Napoleon's early death has not been solved. He was first buried at St. Helena, but in 1840, the French chose to reclaim their notorious former emperor. His body was transported to Paris and buried at the Church of the Dome. After all we have covered, what do you make of Napoleon Bonaparte? Do you think he was cruel? I would say in part. Do you think he was evil? I'm not convinced, but I do think Napoleon was crazed by power. He truly believed he could unite most of Europe under his care and that Europe would be better for it. He never attained his ultimate goal, but said of life, "To have lived without glory, without leaving a trace of one's existence, is not to have lived at all." Napoleon definitely left a trace of his existence. And after Waterloo, the futures of many were changed, including the life of my great-great-great-great-grandfather, who, as I mentioned in Lesson 13, made a fresh start in the New World after Napoleon's defeat and shaped the course of my family history.